Sweet, sweet pesos of money. Yes.
Hello, humans. Welcome to Audio Face. I'm Dan.
I'm John.
And we're off to a great start because I got the name of the podcast right.
Yeah, you did. Except like last time you kept calling it We Made It.
Yeah, this is not the We Made It podcast, but if you'd like to listen to the We Made It podcast on the Syndicate 23 network, you can. Just go to wemadeit.syndicate23.co for a great episode of Soccer Talk with the Boys. I haven't listened to the most recent episode yet, but...
It's hilarious. Good shit. Invite me back on your show, damn it.
You're acting like this is the way we communicate.
This is the way we communicate now. We don't even speak to each other face-to-face. We just talk through podcasts.
Yo, I talk to you, but, like, I need to create a podcast. So, like, next time, just listen to the intro, and then you'll get all the information you need.
Right.
Please, can you start sending me your, like, credit card info over podcast? That'd be great.
What's your little verification code
in the back? Let me get that sosh.
let me get your last four digits of your sosh right now.
I mean, if you really love me, you give me that sosh. Okay, we've got... some news. I want to jump into a dumb thing, but segues into a bigger thing. So Justin Bieber's a douche.
Well, yeah.
I already kind of knew that. Anyways, I don't like to talk about Justin Bieber that much. We talked about him a little bit last episode. We talked about him a little bit this episode, but
he
canceled his tour abruptly.
He's like, nah, guys, I'm out. I'm done. Dip.
Apparently, he's had his come to Jesus moment. Like, literally come to Jesus.
Literal come to Jesus. He's like, oh, yeah, I found religion.
Yeah, and...
because he's trying to sleep with some high chair.
So Kourtney Kardashian... pull the brake. So Kourtney Kardashian... Full disclosure. We usually record this podcast on Saturday mornings. My schedule is conflicted, so this is a Friday night. We're both really tired.
We're really tired.
Yeah, we'd like to go to sleep right now. Elon Musk is announcing my next car, and I'm podcasting. That's how much I'm devoted to you all. But... Justin Bieber canceled his tour in China. He had a come to Jesus moment, and right after that moment, he hit a paparazzo.
So, literally leaving the church, you know, where you're praising God, you know,
saying Jesus.
There's an entity out there.
Jesus.
He's like, nah, this paparazzi dude's in my way, and runs him over by rear-ending him.
Well, you know, Kanye says Jesus walks, but Justin Bieber says, Jesus, get the fuck up out of my way. Maybe Jesus needs to take the wheel.
Oh no, stop.
Okay, stop. This is bad. But so
break.
That's all I want to mention about Justin Bieber, except for the fact that Passion Pits, Michael
Angela Merkel.
The singer for Passion Pit, Passion Pit released an album which we will be detailing in the next like minute or so. But he kind of spoke out about Justin Bieber's like canceling his tour. And related to mental health struggles. Mental health, the topic we've been talking
about. We talked about for a while.
A little bit on the podcast in spurts with the recent like suicides that have happened with Chris Cornell and Chester Bennington. And also mental health series, also on the Syndicate 23 network, coming from Recording for Duty. Look out for that soon. But relating to that, the singer of Passion Pit, Michael, he kind of talked about, he responded to the whole Justin Bieber thing. And how he relates to it.
And just like tweet after tweet after tweet after tweet.
Yeah, just one of those tweet storms where he's talking about how you can't talk about mental health conversations in music as much, at least from his perspective, because it's all about like how much content you can push out, how much music you can do, and how it's like really difficult to work under certain conditions. Yeah, go ahead.
Agree, partially disagree. Because the nice thing about being a musician, when you're a high-paid musician, I should say, is that you can basically take a break whenever the hell you want.
Yeah, you know, especially Justin Bieber.
Especially Justin Bieber. It's like, the dude made $93 million last year or some shit.
Yeah, I heard on somewhere that so Justin Bieber made like $93 million last year on concerts alone. So.
And I mean, and look, he's literally taking a break right now. From at least his concerts and everything, so I don't know what I can't. I'm not going to remotely try to pronounce his name, but not Michael is on about.
I'm not in a position where I can really be sympathetic to Justin Bieber physically ever. But I guess the point he's trying to make is that it's hard to take breaks from mental health related reasons while you're a musician on tour. And I guess I would believe that much if I just didn't think Justin Bieber was such a fucking asshole.
Yeah, he's...
I've had...
He's a crap.
I've had interesting conversations over the past week where, how do you deal with someone who's dealing with suicide? Do you go the Korn's guitarist route? And right. Do you, like, call them out for, like...
You're a pussy. You suck.
Do you call them out for the ramifications of their actions and what they might have to other people? Or do you meet the person where they're at in that, like,
suicidal... You try to bring them back.
...state and then bring them back that way? So it's, like, I guess tough love, or do you reach out to it in a... calmer, kind of more reaching out to another person way. And I think what that ultimately boils down to is how much leeway do you give a person for their mental illness? Because, like, you can be sympathetic if someone's going through a problem, but if they're being an asshole through it, like, it doesn't matter if you're being a mental illness is the cause of it, you're being an asshole to other people and you need to stop. And that's kind of how I feel about Justin Bieber. He's kind of been an asshole his whole life. He kind of, like, doesn't care about, like, the ramifications of things. He's living his wild child life. And people will say, oh, he doesn't know any different. But, like, you know not to be an asshole to people. Even if you're rich, you know not to be an asshole to people. You only are an asshole to people if you're rich because you can do it.
Yeah.
And get away with it because, like, you feel entitled. And Justin Bieber clearly took that route because he sees no consequences. To the extreme. And, like, yeah, maybe he has some issues as a result of that, I'm sure. But, like, that's something you need to deal with on your fucking own.
Right.
Yeah, so enough of that shit. Passion Pit did release an album called Tremendous Sea of Love just today. Sean and I gave it a listen. What are your thoughts?
It was okay. I mean, nothing spectacular, kind of lacking anything really. But, I mean, that's what they've done, you know? Fuck, I can't think of the words because it's too late.
Well, Passion Pit's... this is going to be a great podcast.
Right.
Passion Pit... I've listened to them since Manners came out in 2009, and I've, like, listened to all the other albums.
2009? Oh, God.
Hey, guess what, Sean? We're old.
Well, we're going to talk about we're old later, even though we're not old, but we are old.
But, yeah, I've been listening to Passion Pit on and off since 2009, and I've heard their albums through, and I kind of get the same thing. I get the same takeaway from every single album. It's a little soft. It's really kind of forgettable.
It's good. Just, like, chill.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to relaxing homework music, that's something I would listen to when I was doing work.
But I would call Passion Pit, like, we talked about some artists a long time ago where, like, you can put this in the background and it sounds nice, but it's not elevator music. This is elevator music.
This is what I say, no, but this is elevator music, straight up.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This is
like,
really
it's bad. Okay, but it's really nothing special.
Yeah,
I mean,
and if you like Passion
also,
Pit,
also, hey, I think KK has that stupid snare drum thingy, and I'm like, oh my God, I want
trap snare.
I want to punch you in the face for using that.
I think my favorite song was Undertow from this album, personally.
Like I'm Perfect, even though it's short, but it's a good song. That's about it.
Honestly.
The rest of it's kind of eh. I'm Perfect is the only one that's an upbeat song.
Unfortunately, there's nothing that really stood out to me. I mean, yeah, the vocals are pretty decent, but it's all just this high-frequency kind of drab blends in to me.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd love to say better about it, but...
But nope. Oh well.
In other news, R. Kelly did it. So we reported last week when we had Caesar from the We Made It podcast on talk about R. Kelly, where we had him renounce him.
The greatest R&B man ever.
But he makes hits.
No,
we had Caesar renounce R. Kelly last episode. But
which probably hurt his soul.
I just wanted to point out, in case you didn't think that R. Kelly was either at best... A sleazy asshole, and at worst, definitely guilty, allegedly. The fact that he has hired Bill Cosby's lawyer—that's
rough.
That's bad.
That's not good.
Bill Cosby, for the folks counting at home, is accused and probably definitely did it of sexually assaulting somewhere around 50 women who have just come out about it, including countless more that have been like settled with in the past. So,
yeah. Did the Fox News version of like. Put it under the table.
Yeah, and Bill Cosby and his publicist even had the idea of, oh yeah, we're going to do a tour about sexual assault, and we're going to talk about sexual assault around the country to get people engaged in the conversation.
Oh, God.
Having Bill Cosby talk about sexual assault is like having Donald Trump give lectures on money laundering.
I was going to say something wild, but I'm not going to.
Pull the brake.
I'm pulling the brake hard right now.
But yeah, R. Kelly did it.
R. Kelly did it.
That's
allegedly
pretty obvious. No, I'm pretty sure he didn't. In case you didn't know, R. Kelly is running a sex cult. If you are confused, please listen to the last episode.
Please listen to us.
But yes, R. Kelly has a sex cult, and I'm pretty certain of it.
Well,
if you do weird
sex... You pee on a girl first off, and then you make a sex cult.
No. You marry an underage girl, and you pee on a girl, and you have a sex cult. At least, from what we know, the members of the sex cult are legal age, which is a good move for...
Allegedly. Me. They may have them fake birth certificates from Chile or some shit, you know.
Let's pull the brake
on that now.
I can see where this is going.
Yeah, that's the... Oof.
All Fidel right. does not like it.
I like Fidelity.
Fidel.
It's with the Fidel Castro's
birthday. Great Boondocks episode. Arcade Fire came out with their album, Everything Now.
Everything Now.
And we talked about their single. It was pretty slam dunk. We talked about how they worked with Daft Punk on it and how much I really don't care that you work with Daft Punk.
Honestly, I totally forgot that Toma did that with them.
Yeah.
And that's that's our big segment later in the podcast, which we'll talk about more.
Yeah, later in the podcast, we'll be talking about should artists do collaborations and to what extent and how much and does it help at all. But anyways, so Everything Now is out and they've been releasing singles that have come from it. And like we said, we would talk about all the singles, but like, why bother when we're going to devote time talking about this album now? Especially seeing it as a full piece, we can really get like a better idea of all of it. And
I like it a lot.
Yeah,
it flows together perfectly.
Arcade Fire knows how to make an album. This, like, I'm gonna try my best to describe this, although I'm pretty sure I'm gonna fail. So, Reflector, the last Arcade Fire album that came out, and what I would say is my favorite Arcade Fire album still. It started really strong with what could have been like a single track, and like kind of was Reflector, right? And then it goes through this like sonic journey, if you will, through like highs and lows, and everything kind of like works together as an album, even though I guess Reflector is 2 discs long. I think, I don't know if Supersymmetry needed to be on the album, but I'll give you a wacky end song for Reflector, the album. But Everything Now kind of follows that same pattern. Everything Now, the melody kind of ends the album. It begins the album.
As you have Everything Now, continued, Everything Now. The last song, Everything Now.
So the first song is Everything _ Now, continued. The second song of the album is Everything Now. And the 13th song of the album is Everything Now, continued, in brackets. Or parentheses. I used to hate people who called parentheses brackets, and now I've become one of those people. Gosh. Guess that's what happens when you become an adult and have a job and have more important things to care about. Don't you love this nighttime version of audio?
This is fucking rough.
All the cheeriness that I usually bring in the morning has been beaten out of me by capitalism, and so I am just really just on
neoliberalism is just shooting you down, man. Central banks.
I'm the one who made the communist reference this episode, so right? that's where we are.
That's bad. If it's you hooking it up instead of me, that's bad.
Hey, Sean, get ready. I'm about to put you on blast. Apparently, the last song you're listening to on Spotify was Fuckboy Moi's You and I. What's up? Yeah. You come back around?
I honestly gave that album another listen to, and I started to like it. There was one I heard on KCRW like 2 or 3 days ago, and that I listened to the whole album because I was trying to find what damn song it was because it was good, and I didn't remember listening to it at all. And I go, what the hell?
I keep forgetting you listen to radio. Your boy need to get an aux.
No,
bad.
This is the only radio I listen to. This morning becomes eclectic because I don't know what the hell I'm getting. I always find good shit. That's the only thing.
All right, hipster.
I'm such
but you're fair. Okay, let's go back to Everything.
Let's go back
now. Not tangent too horribly.
So
like we
it's
are.
Lately there's been a few albums that have come out that have been kind of like Foster the People's album, which was really sporadic. This one is not sporadic at all. Like, you know, I tell people when I listen to an album, a new one, I listen to it full through once, then I put it on shuffle, because that way I can get a sense. Because each album, to me, when I listen to it, kind of pictures your whole mood. In a way.
Yes.
And this one for sure does that. Every song feels like it fits together. It runs through it in its entirety. It's good. It's just overall good album. I'm very pleased with it. And pleasantly surprised, because I didn't know what they were going to do, because they're usually more, not folky, but I don't know how to describe
Americana?
Yeah, because that's like a hard term.
You can't.
But this one is straight alternative.
Sean, how electronic is it? Too electronic for you? Too many bleeps and bloops?
Too many bleeps and too many triggers and buttons. No, it's actually, like, it feels like a good modern day album, honestly. What the industry can be, you know?
Yeah.
That makes any sense. So it's good. I'm very happy with it.
Yeah.
I don't have a favorite song yet because there's a lot.
So I have answers for all of those. Let's go in reverse order because that's how I'm thinking about it. Point number one, my favorite song on the album, Signs of Life. It's song number three. I don't know what I am. I guess I'm just a sucker for, like, kind of funky songs that, like...
It's pretty funky.
Yeah.
It's cool, though.
Yeah. Songs early on in the albums that are, like, upbeat and kind of funky. I felt the same about Gorilla's Strobe Light. That was a real favorite of mine.
Oh, my God, that sounds so good.
No, yeah, I really love how that works. The lyrics to Creature Comfort just, like, sting on a personal level.
Yeah.
I think that's, like...
I knew that when I was listening to it. I'm like, that's going to hurt.
Yeah. That hurt me.
Yo.
I will give it to Arcade Fire. They are very good at writing lyrics. And to my point, this is the most zeitgeist album of 2017. I feel like, although... And a lot of reviewers will disagree with me. Because I don't do this very often, but I happen to look at some of the reviews for everything now on other websites, like your Varieties, your Consequence of Sound. For some reason, The Ringer, the sports website's doing music takes now, which
what
is fun.
What the fuck?
It's like listening to a bad Jim Rome smack-off call, but like written.
Like, you get that golden ticket removed or what?
It's like schmackyschmigglehelicopter.com with takes. But
that's an obscene reference.
The album didn't get... If you understood that reference, you should be on the podcast.
You need to be on the podcast now.
Yeah, because you are Sean and I's good friends. Yes. But
have a take, don't suck. Anyway.
So yeah, a lot of the websites gave this album kind of a...
A shit review.
Yeah.
Or they said, like... What would they say?
At best, they said that, like, Arcade Fire hasn't made many terrible albums. This isn't a terrible album, but it's probably their weakest album.
I don't agree with that.
I really don't. I think this is... I don't know if this is their best album. I wouldn't consider myself an Arcade Fire diehard enough to have heard all their albums many, many times and have strong opinions on all of them. But I have heard most of their albums fully through, and I love them. Love is a strong word. Like, so wishy-washy on this podcast. But
we like them. We strongly like them.
Back to my point of, like, being zeitgeisty, I
like that
some
word.
People have... Of course you do, it's German. But some people have said, they're trying too hard on this theme of being overwhelmed by technology and media, and they're like kind of trying too hard with that. And maybe I have a bias because I work in media and I'm surrounded by technology and I live in like Silicon Valley or very near it, and all of these things feel very prevalent to me as like a new media news person related type
and
thing.
I mean, it feels it because I mean, obviously, the bloody album is named Everything Now, and that's the point. Is
their tour is infinite content.
Yeah.
It is
perfect for the times because that's what I feel like. Too many people are just staring at the goddamn phone the whole time and trying to get literal infinite content. No pun intended. But the
Creature Comforts lyrics, like, make me. God, make me famous. If not, just make it painless. Many references to suicide there. And like,
yeah,
it's kind of all about the extreme vanity, the like dopamine hit you get from like noticing you have a lot of likes on a picture or trying to appear
followers
perfect.
Or shit.
God, it stings. But no, I maybe it's just because I'm knee deep in this industry, but I like that there is like a musical kind of cynical take to it all, because this is exactly what I feel in an album, and I have that bias because I feel like an album speaks to me. Someone could say, oh, this Passion Pit album speaks to me, why don't you give that a great review? So knowing that it speaks to me, I'll try to take that out of it.
Okay.
But I do think it says something like kind of relevant about the times. Like the other songs that I felt like were kind of weak, I felt like Infinite Content was where the album kind of lulls down a bit, and maybe this is where some reviewers had issues. But
let me grab my headphones because
I
need to remember which song is which. Because there is one on there that I didn't really care for. The rest of it was good, and I think it might be We Don't Deserve Love, but let me check.
I didn't like Peter Pan that much, and I didn't like Good Goddamn as I thought I would, because if you got, like, if you've got a song...
Are you about to call Kendrick Lamar on that now?
No, but like, damn, 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 if it won't, yeah. I get to see Kendrick in 2 weeks, in 1 week, thank God. No, as I was saying, if you're gonna have a song like Good Goddamn or some song like that, it better, like, live up to the name. Mm-hmm. Like, Gorillaz made a song called Sex Murder Party, and it's great. It's mm-hmm. a really fun song. It's precisely what I expect it to
be
like.
The only song I don't like is We Don't Deserve Love.
Right.
Like, that's the only song I like. Oh, actually, I don't like, but I feel like it's the weakest song on the album. And that's the only thing I didn't like. I keep saying like a lot. I didn't.
If you're from Southern California, it's natural.
But I never do that. But I guess that's what happens when I'm tired.
Yeah.
It's the only song that didn't really... Yeah, it won't stand out on its own.
Right. Other,
I don't count ones that are under 2 minutes. Those are just fillers.
Yeah.
You feel, you know, just instrumental or whatever. But this is the only one that... And it's the longest track on the album, too. But it's the only song that I didn't really...
Yeah. And We Don't Deserve Love would be, like, an outro song for the album, right? Because... The Everything Now Continue just kind of like, almost like a hymn. It could be a continued version of Everything Now. I really don't know why they, like,
actually, for example, it's funny that the last Everything Now Continue kind of sounded like a Gorillaz song to me in a way.
Yeah.
With just how the backing electronic part sounded
a lot. To be honest, I kind of thought, like, Spotify accidentally, like, mislabeled the entire album. When I
first right?
heard it, 'cause I was like, I need to look up the track list to make sure Spotify didn't really goof. But... I don't get why Everything Now, the song, was broken up into pieces. I don't get why the song Infinite Content looked like it was broken up in half. Because, yeah, they have different tempos and moods, but, like, make it the whole song. Or cut up Everything Now and make it into two parts. That would have made it more complete. Now it just feels, like, kind of weird. I guess I am finding little bits to pick at with this album.
But that's just because...
Which is why I try not to read reviews before to, like, taint my opinions, right? But... What are you going to say?
No, it's just, I see what they're trying to do. But, again, I like it a lot.
Yeah, I like it too. I think I do want to see them live, because I would just like to see Arcade Fire live. They look fun.
And honestly, this is going to be an album I'm listening to a lot. Like how when Phoenix came out with Te Amo, I listened to that a lot for the month of June. I listened to it a lot.
I haven't listened to that in a while.
But, and then now I'll be listening to this basically most of August.
Yeah.
I kind of do that with music, you know, I kind of go in chunks. So this is definitely going to be something I listen to a lot, and it's good. I'm happy with it. So
overall, Everything Now, I would say cut past the hot takes and the critic cruft, I guess, and give it a shot, because if you like Arcade Fire, you're going to love this album. And I think this might be Arcade Fire's Hail to the Thief. Sorry to bring up the Radiohead reference on the podcast, but, like,
Sean and I... specifically told me not to.
Yeah, but this
that
was just too perfect, because,
that,
like,
actually is a very, very good...
Even, like, Hail to the Thief is an often-forgotten Radiohead album, and even Radiohead fans don't like it, but
It's the best album God made ever. Jesus Christ himself blessed that album with holy water from the Vatican.
My sources tell me that Justin Bieber was listening to Hail to the Thief while he was in that church before running over the
podcast. Yes. He was listening to Go to Sleep in Myxomatosis, dancing around in red pants.
No, I think he was with Kourtney Kardashian singing Drunken Punch-Up at a Wedding.
No, he's backing up this truck.
Helltown.
Whoa.
All right.
Anyways, it's their Hail to the Thief, but let's just stop.
Yeah.
Pull a break. Good album. Listen to it.
All right. Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails, who... is also Apple Music's creative officer.
What?
So the reason he has that title is, A, anytime you see someone with the name creative officer in their title, it's bullshit.
Let's say, that sounds like a
filler. Need I remind you that Will.i.am is a creative, like, consultant or person at Intel.
Dude, and I have no idea.
Trust me, it's a good thing they keep Will.i.am the fuck away from the Core i7s.
Damn it, I was going to drop a really nerd thingy, but I'm so tired, I cannot think. It's inside a processor, how many little thingies are in the processor and whatnot.
Yeah.
He's like, William doesn't know shit about that.
Yeah, but...
How there's an i9 now, he doesn't know.
But Trent Reznor worked on the Beats team, and of course Beats got bought by Apple.
By Dre.
And so he Beats by Dre got bought by Apple
by Tim. Trent.
By Steve.
R.I.P. Steve.
Apple by Steve.
Apple's never been the same without you, man. That's why I'm an Android man.
Oh. You said that? I can't tell if Steve Jobs would have beheaded someone for creating an iPhone without a headphone jack. Or, like, giving them a raise. I really don't
I
know.
I think he would have given him a raise.
Because Steve Jobs also came up with very dumb decisions.
And then he would go French Revolution on their ass, Rousseau, and be like, get that guillotine out. And
remember my like, non-sequitur for Bezos?
Yeah.
So how long do you think Bezos gets the guillotine?
Dude, Bezos is going to get that guillotine hard.
I'm not actually advocating for the beheading of Jeff Bezos. I very much love Amazon Prime, and I cannot wait to watch Top Gear's the Grand Tour Season 2. But I like to take a communist, like, extreme to pretty much everything in my life. So when the richest man has to face the humble proletariat, you know, you want to see what happens.
I coined those phrases.
I have a coworker who believes that that Jeff Bezos has one of those Iron Man suits. It's going to be, like, murking civilians.
I mean, I wouldn't
And
be
will
surprised.
Never be killed.
Right? I wouldn't be surprised.
Either that or he'll have a drone. Anyways. So Trent Reznor, not sure how we got there, but we're here. See what it's like when we record a podcast when we're retired. Trent Reznor is a important guy at Apple, and he gave an interview to Variety where there were a lot of good revelations that kind of came out of
Interesting. Yeah, I'm
and
reading these.
I wanted to bring this up because we've talked a lot about, like, the economics of music and, like, artists not being paid properly, all of that stuff. And 9to5Mac came out with a really good headline from that Variety interview. Vulture. Anything begins with a V and is a publication, I pretty much assume is Variety. But right. Vulture did that interview, and 9to5Mac had the interview where Trent Reznor is talking about how the economics of music really aren't working that well. I guess he said that people will value albums when they... He says that people tend to value albums more when they pay for them, but at the same time he sees benefits of accessing the more obscure stuff. So, like, it's people value albums more when you buy them physically, and it's like, says something I physically buy, but there's usefulness to being able to have an infinite catalog because you can discover more music. So it's like the pluses and minuses of having streaming as a main form of work, right?
I see what you mean by it. He means by it. It's interesting, though, because as industry is, you know, really starting to slowly change, as now, because Apple have discontinued their MP3 iPods because of basically. Because, you know, they said that...
Can we just pour one out for the fact that the iPod, as we think of it, no longer exists now?
It's discontinued.
Yeah, so, really fast, but because the fact, like... Apple no longer sells any new devices that don't connect to Apple Music. So Apple Music is now the default for consuming music on Apple devices.
Because of streaming.
You're not supposed to, not supposed to download songs anymore, like buy individual albums.
Really?
Although I think you still can. But, like, they really just want you to stream.
Is that why they got rid of my Moonshaped Pool? You know, I had that on that. Hey, Apple, if you're listening to this, Tim Cook, if you're listening to this, you fucking got rid of my Moonshaped Pool album. That shit's gone from Apple.
I feel like it's deleted.
Don't own it, apparently. That's cool. Thanks, guys.
Because Apple deletes music that you own. I think this is going to be a drunken rant to the world that we're just putting out there.
It really is a drunken rant. I don't drink.
Yeah, the iPod itself, like, no longer exists now, which is crazy. Streaming is streaming is, like,
it's
the future. Why bother?
Yeah.
We don't download MP3s anymore. MP3s are, like, an obsolete file format now.
It's just like how CDs went out, how cassettes went out.
Dude, we're getting old. And we're not even at that segment yet. But what else does Trent Reznor say? He says, the economics of music aren't what they should be, and the culture isn't giving the arts its fair due, but humans are always going to respond to emotion and storytelling. I believe that as much as I ever did.
So, I agree with the latter part of it, for sure.
100%, yeah.
Always need expression, and music is one of the biggest forms of self-expression.
I always have this existential crisis where, like, what's the point of media, really? And it's the fact that we get people's attention, and attention is a commodity. Okay. In the sense that, like, people are going to always, like, companies are always going to want to advertise products.
Of course.
We can't just have a channel where we just put advertisements on it the whole time, unless you're QVC or you're Fox and you're wanting to buy some nuclear warships, and Northrop Grumman's got some advertisements for that. But, like...
Jesus Christ.
Okay, I'll be non-political.
You buy some stock in Raytheon. Pull that break. Yeah, pull that break.
I'll be non-political. Most of the cable news outlets have many advertisements for General Electric and Northrop Grumman, things that no one has ever bought anything from.
They're
since GE stopped making refrigerators.
Liberal assholes.
We need to get you on Chapo Trap House. It'd be a great podcast for you.
Oh god! But this is what happens, guys. This is what happens when we have to pump out content and we're
really
exhausted.
Late at night. But back to, let's not derail this conversation too much. I'm glad that someone as high up as Trent Reznor understands that the economics are not working well, but
yeah,
that they understand that music and art still play a big
one
role
of the biggest roles in society,
culture and society, and shaping it and how our opinions go, and that. Because that's always going to be there, you have to, at least what I'd extrapolate from his point, you have to work to make sure that because this is such an important service for everyone and that people really value this, figuring out what's the right value to ask of consumers, how can we help perpetuate this so that more people consume music, how do we just get the cycle working so that it benefits everyone involved?
Yeah.
While not screwing too many people over in the process.
Yeah, and this is the... Well, we've talked about that a few episodes ago of what the fuck, how do you... Like, with streaming, how are you artists going to get paid more and this or that? And we had a lengthy discussion on that. It was interesting that now, yeah, higher-up people are really starting to get the boot.
Yeah.
So...
And last thing, since we're talking about this, for the 3.5 people who use Google Play Music...
Right.
It's now going to merge with YouTube Red, which is like this premium version of YouTube where you can watch it ad-free and you can, like, if you have Android, you can watch YouTube picture-in-picture, so you can, like, leave the YouTube app and it'll still be playing.
Yeah.
Which is, like, nice. And you used to be able to, like, hack around to do it in Android before, but they really blocked that down. But, yeah, they're going to be combining into one service, so that'll be a value add if you are one of the three people who actually use Google Play Music. Seriously, get Spotify.
Yeah.
But... That's about it. We have one last thing to go over. Cage the Elephant released a live album, Unpeeled. And we talked about this when it was news that this was coming out. And I had the strong opinion that I don't like live albums because I would rather listen to an artist live.
And
like have that whole performance. And yeah, you had the opposite opinion, right?
Mm-hmm. And because there's been a lot of good live albums and stuff, but Unpeeled is, it's more like stripped down.
I see what you mean.
Version, because you know a lot of they're not. It's not like Rattle and Hum with U2, where there's certain songs on Rattle and Hum that were new
a
U2 at the
album
time.
That was also live, right?
And then half of it is live, where you can hear the audience in the background. These are really. Not that, like you. Some of the songs you can hear that. Some of them you can't. But it's really just like a stripped back version of the songs. So
yeah,
and so it's not in that respect. It's not a full live album. Not like Rattle and Hum or something like that. If you.
But I think these were recorded.
They're recorded live, but I'm saying the quality
to
and
an
stuff.
Audience too. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not like other live albums where it's. Very obvious it's live, if that makes any sense. So with this, it's good. I like it. I mean, because to me, an Unpeeled and or live album is... It can express different versions of a song, because certain songs live are different than studio, if that makes any sense. And with that, they can sound really good or really bad, depending on the artist.
Yeah.
But I listen to this, and it's good. I like it. Honestly.
Yeah, it's...
I mean, I'm not a huge Cage the Elephant person, but, yeah, it's overall good.
I've seen Cage the Elephant live once before, and I was in the Cage the Elephant quite a bit in high school. And
yeah, I remember that, but I didn't know you saw them.
Yeah, I liked the songs that I really love from Cage the Elephant. So I really love Spiderhead, Come a Little Closer, Cigarette Daydreams, Ain't No Rest for the Wicked, of course, the classic. Telescope, I really loved. Crybaby. I liked being able to hear those songs I really know and really love and I've listened to and combined hundreds of times. And mm-hmm. then seeing this new version of it, I've never been one who's into covers of songs. I don't really care for like people's covers unless it's like really particular, really cool. Like you're performing Bohemian Rhapsody on a xylophone. Like that I might check out. But I don't really like covers that much or even like renditions by different artists. But
very rare.
This is where I'm starting to turn towards like Sean's point of actually, you know, I can see where the market is for this. I actually kind of like this and dare I say enjoy it. No, it was a really good album. It's very acoustic-y. Some parts are stripped down, some parts are a little bit reworked, but it's not like reinventing the wheel. If you know a song by Cage the Elephant and you know how it sounds like as a studio version, they're not really changing it up. There are definitely other artists who like
live and studio is totally different.
Like they're almost different genres.
Yeah.
When you're playing live versus in the studio. I would compare Gorillaz to that.
Yeah.
Many other bands are very much like that. And that's not exactly what you're getting from Cage the Elephant, but you are getting a different sound. I think it's something that not only Cage the Elephant, but especially Cage the Elephant is very good at tapping into this kind of live, a little bit rough around the edges sound that still sounds really good. So yeah, if you have Cage the Elephant songs, especially if you like have favorites, give it a shot. I don't see much of a need to listen to this whole album through unless you're a real Cage the Elephant fan. Just like take the songs you recognize, you like, listen to it, and you'll go, hey, that's cool that this version exists, I suppose.
Yeah. So anyways, we're going to Libluck 2.
Yeah, which this is our little conversation.
Our discussion, which...
It's come up a lot.
It's come up a lot, and I think it's a very good conversation to have because I know I'm very passionate about it.
Yeah. So I guess if we were doing this as a debate, the resolution would be it's not good for artists to collaborate.
So the question is bad for artists to collaborate? So what we've been having a lot in the industry is albums and stuff coming out where each one is featuring somebody.
Each album features like it might have 13 songs and 15 featured artists.
Yeah, and it's just it seems to be so intertwined, you know, especially the very very popular either hip hop R&B artists, rap artists do all kind of start to collaborate with each other, and now it's really really getting big, you know, and that's going into different genres of music even where like with Kendrick Lamar, you had U2 going or Bono coming up and featuring on a song, and now it's crossing genres. So that's the conversation that we want to have as our main segment, your main set. Or like, main set of 10x100 on 130.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Swimming reference.
Yeah, because many of the people of the podcast will enjoy the swimming reference.
Right.
Plus, let's do a quick little Easter egg. Annie just texted me, and she's in Germany. She says hi.
Why is she in my country? I didn't know she was going to Germany.
Yeah, I don't know. Hi, Annie. Anyways.
Tell my cousins I say it's up.
So
tell them V-Gates.
So, I know I told you not to talk about your favorite band. I take that off. You can talk about Radiohead a little bit. But
I'm not really going to because they don't collaborate.
Well, that's also true.
They're the most shy band in the world. Thom Yorke, on the other hand, does do collaborations, but that doesn't have to do with this. This is different.
So, Gorillaz. It's a band I really love, and it's a band that's kind of created off of, we're going to have these virtual characters so that many people can be behind the project collaborating and working together to create cool music. And, like, it doesn't matter because it's this virtual band bringing all the sounds to mm-hmm. you, right? And I love that idea. I love that concept. Every single album has slowly and slowly started having more and more collaborators to the point where, like, you see Gorillaz performing Escape to Plastic Beach live and, like, there's fucking 40 people on stage sometimes. It's stripped down more for, like, their Humans tour more recently. But even their newest album, Humans, like, some songs have 2, 3, even 4 artists collaborating on it. And I think what might be like just as clear as day, but needs to be said, there's a difference between collaboration for collaboration's sake and collaboration with a purpose. I think when artists go, there's something you do that I really enjoy that I want to bring with something that I do that I really enjoy, where neither one will overpower the other, they'll complement each other, and we can create a cool song out of it. Whether it's like, hey, I made these like really good instrumentals that people really like,
beep, boop, boop,
and you have a great voice.
That would go along with these beep, boop, boop, bops.
And then let's put your with the beep bop, and then, you know.
And that whoo and the beep bop, you know, goes with weather.
So make some content.
And then you pump that out into an album.
Take your whoo with the beep bop, and then make some content.
So, and then there's the exact, and then there's the opposite of like Calvin Harris' late album where it's fucking Frank Ocean, Migos, Schoolboy Q, Party Next Door, Dram, Young Thug, Pharrell Williams, Ariana Grande, Future, Snoopies, more Pharrell, Katy Perry, Big Sean. Like, goddamn, you're just gonna. This is my comment. What I've been saying is, what the hell? Are artists not able to even do their own work, it seems now? And I understand for. I was just giving an example for Calvin Harris, and I understand why he did it, though, because he was changing his sound a little bit, and you need for him to do those songs, he needs those collaborations, but that's just an example of what...
Referring to Funkwave Bounces Volume 1, by the way.
I mean, and there's so many artists now that they're doing that. Like, Ariana Grande's records will feature multiple high-level musicians and vice versa, and... I mean, it seems like everybody's freaking doing it now.
Yeah, like, even, like, Vince Staples, like, there were a lot of collaborations on that album, mm-hmm. and, like, those were, the collaborations on the album were somewhat better than some of the other ones, and they were a little more understated than some of the other ones.
They were very understated.
Like, GTA produced a song, but they just, like, produced a song, then, like, Vince Staples rapped over it, and that's pretty much about how it should go.
And then there's Calvin Harris, where the entire album... has, you have to give him the feature part. And then so many new rap albums and stuff have been doing that to me, where the industry is interesting now because I wrote this down before, where you had, back in the day, you didn't have collaborations. When the two biggest bands in the world in the 60s were Beatles and Beach Boys, what did they do? Each album that they came out were their own albums, and they tried to push each other, push the envelope of music, push the envelope of what they could produce as a band. And they were each other's biggest fans and each other's biggest, harshest critics.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can't think of the lead singer of the Beach Boys, but he was, like, obsessed with making sounds and a bunch of other stuff, and he really pushed the guys hard. And then vice versa in the Beatles. I mean, looking at the last song on Revolver, where... they took a microphone and made it just wrap around and go crazy, so it sounded like they were going around in a circle. Stuff like that. Tomorrow Never Comes, there we go. I can see the song title. And now you have the opposite, where people are coming together, which is cool, but to me it's done way too much now, to where I don't know what, you know, a normal album would be from an artist. Because you could say Drake will be featured on... fuck knows how many records, plus then his own music, which already features a bunch of people.
Well, Drake isn't that bad. He's not that bad. A lot of other artists,
but I think I can know, like, he's being featured on a lot of other people's stuff and vice versa.
So,
that's kind of a weak example. There's others where it's like ridiculous. Yeah.
Migos, is everywhere. Snoop Dogg is kind of everywhere.
So it's just, to me, it's starting to water down the industry to where we always talk about how stuff starts to sound the same, and I think that might be one of the biggest reasons why, because to me it sounds like artists aren't pushing each other like they used to do.
Right, yeah.
You know, they're not going, hey, I'm a big fan of your music, instead of working together, which is one thing, but I want to see what you can do. You know, I want to have you have your own voice and really try to push the envelope, and then so that way I can take a little bit of what you're working on and then put it into my own thing, put my own spin on it, and then with that produce something that is completely different. And that's, you know, going back to the Beatles, Beach Boys comparison, that's what they would do. You know, one album.
They would push each other to be better.
Yeah, I mean, that's why their albums are ridiculously good.
Yeah.
Like, top to bottom.
I can see that.
And that's
well, it's
why,
one reason.
Yeah.
Well, it's not just, like, the only reason.
It's not,
like,
just, you know. It's not the only reason, but I think that's one of the biggest reasons is that. And people tend to forget that because now people are, like, I don't know, so obsessed with certain artists and stuff, but it really all starts to kind of blend together after a while, you know?
Yeah.
With these big high-name artists. I'm not talking indie rock or whatever. I'm talking, you know, the top where everybody knows them.
I definitely understand what you're saying.
And that's my biggest complaint to where, okay, it's cool. Like, Gorillaz is one thing. They were built for collaboration, but an artist like... I don't even know what it is.
Any random artist.
Any random big name, hip-hop, R&Bs, especially rap artist.
Yeah.
They do so many collaborations now. It's like, okay, who are you without these people in your songs, you know?
I think you make a lot of great points I want to address.
That's pretty much because who would you be by yourself without the help of these other people? Which, it's cool to have the help, but to me, you're starting to lose... that little kick.
What makes you an artist? What makes you like you?
Yeah.
And I had a lot of thoughts during that, but my one big burning one is, so we can pretty much agree that most of these collaborations just kind of feel like it's been phoned in. Like, hey, you have to come collaborate on this album, come bring your name to this album, come like do a couple bars on this album. Is this just like part of what has kind of become of the music industry, that like having name recognition or having someone on an album as a collaboration will like bring in those fans as an album, like it's a marketing tool?
It is, partially, for sure.
Yeah, because I can't imagine that some of these collaborations like lately just
don't make sense,
right? So it's gotta be like, let's bring some artists from over here and let's have them become fans of you. Like, I don't know why The Weeknd did a song with Lana Del Rey. I don't really associate the two super closely.
No, and so that's a perfect example of, that's kind of cool, but at the same time, is it necessary?
It's cool that you tried that, but I'm not sure either one of them would have like thought about it on their own.
Yeah.
I don't think Snoop Dogg would have done a song with Calvin Harris before, but I guess they worked it out. I think it waters down music when you do collaborations for the sake of collaboration, when you use it as a marketing tool, and you can use it as a marketing tool. You're totally allowed to do that, but come in with more than the intent of, hey, we're going to make a decent song, and like, I'm going to get some new listeners.
A crowd pleaser song, you know, not testing the waters, not trying to be different.
I think,
but
it goes back to what I said, where it's all about intention. And people are coming at the intention wrong. Mm-hmm. I want people to come at the intention with, let's make some dope shit. And let's make this, if it's going to be for Musician A's album, let's make this sound like you, but let's give whatever makes me, Musician B, so talented, let's add that spark so it's like, wow, this is a really nice song.
Yeah.
My favorite Gorillaz song, November Has Come, it's not a perfect song to do this, right? It's my favorite band with my favorite rapper. But Gorillaz is able to be Gorillaz. And they're able to like have their kind of dope instrumentation from Demon Days, that era. And MF Doom is able to spit a, not his best, but like a really good like rap lyric from the prime of his career.
Mm-hmm.
And that's able to come together. They're not overpowering each other. It's not really for name recognition. It's just, let's make a dope album. Or like, let's make a dope track. And that's what I feel like that intention is missing from a lot of these like super huge, like wild collaborations. And yeah, it's a shame. So I say overarching a lot, but like the main point is, are collaborations bad? Basically, my answer is no, but you have to come at them from the right intention, and you have to not just be happy with the fact that you both recorded something and that it sounds decent. You should both record something that, like Sean said, like maybe if you're not competing with them, something that challenges you both, something that really makes you think. Have to work out and maybe sound a little bit differently than you usually have to in order to make the song, because that's how you make the song special. That's how you make it you and whatever artist, other artists collaborate with each other. Also, you don't need to have multiple artists collaborate on one song because then people are just fighting for space.
Yeah, and I was gonna say it gets too crowded now to where
you've only got like 4 minutes usually, yeah, right?
And now it sounds like
if you're gonna have four artists on that album,
half the time I go, wait, this is one artist's song, not the other.
Yeah,
I'm being very vague, but it's because I don't even know what example to give because it's freaking everywhere.
Just because like Gorillaz is on my mind, I'll give you, and these are songs I like still, but.
Well, I mean, Strobe Light has Pevin Everett.
That's one person, but like...
That's one, and then...
The Apprentice featuring Rag & Bone Man, Zebra Cats, and Ray Black from Gorillaz. Like, I think that's a good song, and I think they worked it out really well, but I don't think it needed three collaborators plus, like, Gorillaz, right?
Yeah, and to me, it's just... is it bad for artists to collaborate? I would say... I think it's overdone.
I think artists should, I'm like, not like they're going to listen to us because there are business reasons why they do this, right? But for the sake, for the music.
For the kids.
For the children. I think artists should, when they're producing albums, I think, A, they should realize that they're producing an album on their end and they want to make an album that sounds like themselves. It's their product after all, so it should sound like you. It should be your creation and your work. When you let too many artists in on that, that gets diluted.
And then it starts to become too crowded on the track, and then it starts to really blend together, and then you think one song is from one artist when it's really from another, just because you hear their vocals, so you think, oh, this is Ariana Grande, say, oh, wait, no, it's not.
Yeah.
You know, and that's dangerous to me in its own way, because then it just blurs into one, you know? That's kind of my rant. Half-asleep rant.
Yeah, but I hope that this, like, collaboration fever kind of dies soon, because I really want to get back to listening to artists' visions full out. Like, Arcade Fire, you can say what you want to about that album, whether it's good or not, but, like, that's Arcade
Fire's vision. That's them. That's nobody. They're not bringing in Bjork or something, even though it'd be kind of cool. But
and, like, if you do that, that's fine. Like,
it's okay for like one or two songs, but not an entire album, and then not over and over and over again when you make an album every year.
If you have, if you're making an album and most of it's just collaborations, then you're just doing that for like money, attention, and branding. Pretty if you're much. Doing that album and it's mostly you with a couple other collaborations, I'm more likely to look at those collaborations and go, it was for a reason.
And those songs tend to be some of the best on the album as well.
Yeah, like Kendrick Lamar, he did this pretty well, I would say. Like, there are only a couple features on this album. It's Rihanna, U2, and Zachary. I didn't know who Zachary was before that, but, like, that's a good song. Triple X featuring U2, that's ultimately a good song, and U2 adds a lot to it. And Bono. The video for Loyalty just came out today, and, yeah, Rihanna's a great addition to that. But everything else is just Kendrick. And you can tell that it's his vision, and that's how he saw it. And that's where
I liked that a lot when Damn was released. I go, wow, I'm surprised. I thought it was going to be a lot of collaborations on it, because that's what it seems to have been doing. And he did that before.
Because rap, especially hip-hop, is built upon collaborations. Like, you have the rap group where on Wu-Tang Clan, you have, like, many people rapping in on the same album. Yeah. And, like, that's part of the fun of it. And, like, that's cool. And it's, like, that's okay. But again, you can bring in too many voices, you can really dilute what you're going for. And so,
yeah, for sure.
Artists, please don't do that too much. All right, we made it through that pretty much.
We made it.
God damn it. We made it to a podcast you can listen on Syndicate 23. I'm tired. Thank you so much for listening through this. If you made it through this, you're the real one. This is like
we had some good takes, but we were so damn tired.
Low energy.
Low.
Sad. You know what we need? We need some cocaine Scaramucci smoking. Ow!
Oh, Jesus. We need Susquehanna weed.
Are you ready for some sucker communications?
What do I do? It's like six drugs.
Oh, man. I would love to have a night at Scaramucci. I would love to see what Scaramucci's 8-ball is like. All right, but
dude, that 8-ball is...
That's
a big 8-ball of coke.
Please rate this podcast based on our other episodes on iTunes. Follow SW Suarez on Twitter and Instagram. Follow me on Twitter at Dan from the Web and Instagram at Dan from the Internet. exciting things coming out. And thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with another podcast with way more energy.
Not dead, and more takes.
And yeah, also, we need to actually give Lorde's album Melodrama a really like full review, and we really haven't yet, sadly. We keep pushing that back, but they will be on next week for sure.
Yeah, should have done it well.
Because, yeah, it's a good album, and I want to do it justice.
Yes, for sure. All right.
I'm good. You ready to go?
Yeah, that's it. Cheers, guys.
Bye.